across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, February 7th, 2024, and it's another truly beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or through the app, or watching us on one of our many social media video feeds or on demand by podcast. Thanks for subscribing to that. Nice to have you along. Feel free to join us at any point along the day at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. You can call us or text us by phone or through the Civic Media app. You can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or put a comment on one of our Facebook pages where you're watching. We'd love to hear what's on your mind today. If one of those things especially is winter coming back. I mean, it was 56 here yesterday in Chippewa Falls, and we're going to smash a record again today here and other places throughout Wisconsin. And look, there's still plenty of time for winter to return, but I mean, we're going to get rain tomorrow, not snow. And you wonder, you know, what is left to give? If it's going to be a bunch of rain, is it going to be a bunch of snow? Or is this kind of where we're going to be at for a little while here? Just a lot of uncertainty, which is unfortunate for businesses throughout the northern part of the state that rely on winter tourism. And I just think back to 10 years ago, exactly 10 years ago right now, we were getting set for our move, our three-year move living in Grand Cayman. And it was the snowiest winter ever at that point. I mean, the snow was piled everywhere at this point, you know, in the year. It's weird not to see a single flake out there right now, but that's where we are at this point, unfortunately. Coming up this morning, we've got a bit of a labor theme in both hours, coincidentally. In our first hour, we're going to talk about how there's a future for union labor in the green economy. We're going to be joined by Melissa Baldoff in our weekly climate check, and she brings along Andrew Dish from the Regional Council of Carpenters to illustrate the ways that labor unions are ensuring that the upcoming wave of clean energy jobs has great pay and benefits and opportunities available to people at any skill level. Don't necessarily need a college degree for the jobs that are going to be building the green energy infrastructure of our future. Then we go in the other direction in our second hour, looking back and talking about the importance of teaching the history of the labor movement in the United States. We'll talk to John Shelton and Harvey Kay about the importance of teaching labor history in Wisconsin schools so that tomorrow's workers are not only well-educated, but also understand how on-the-job respect, safety, and compensation, these are things that should never be taken for granted in the workplace. We'll also talk to Brittany Merlot, get our forecast. We'll talk to Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio, and Todd Alba will wrap things up all along the way. Those 6 o'clock temperatures around Wisconsin across the Civic Media universe look like this morning. It's 39 already up here in Chippewa Falls, where folks are listening on 93.5 The Tap. For folks listening to Buzz of the North in Hayward, you're at 30 degrees right now. Let's see, Park Falls is at 35. Bull Falls Radio listeners in Wausau, you're at 32. 31 in Green Bay. 37 in La Crosse for listeners of the Eagle. Wisconsin Rapids is at 30. Oshkosh, 30. Madison, 30. And over at the Shaw in Waukesha, it's 28 degrees, where we find Greg Bach ready to get his day started. Mr. Bach, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you today?
I'm well. I'm, again, as you can probably tell, just kind of perplexed by this weather. Oh. I mean, I'm not, again, not being, I don't, you know, cross-country ski or snowshoe or anything like that. So, I mean, it's not hurting me, but it's just weird that it's like this. And I do feel bad for everybody that relies on winter tourism.
Yeah, I mean, I came, I got out of the car today, and the car was completely frosted over. And I was like, wait, what? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, it's February. What am I doing here? Yes. And then I looked at the weather. I'm like, tomorrow's supposed to be in the 50s. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what's going on?
I know. It's just such an odd thing. But again, it keeps the roads a little safer, there's not the slipping hazards and all of that. So I'm trying to look at some of the positive aspects of it. It's just a little weird. Did you catch the hullabaloo? Uh-oh, I think I need a bell.
Oh!
Over...
was there a kerfuffle?
No, it was a hullabaloo.
Oh.
Over a social media post last week by Elmo of Sesame Street.
I had heard something about this that apparently Elmo just said, "How are you doing?"
Yes, like, that's it. Elmo is checking in. How is everybody doing? On Twitter to his 457,000 followers.
Elmo, rookie mistake.
Don't ask how you doing. But no, seriously, it underscored that, yeah, we should ask people more often, you know, how are you doing? There was some, obviously, there's a lot of sarcasm on social media. No, there's a lot of humor. But there were a lot of, you know, heartfelt things that were both, you know, happy and sad along the way. And the folks at Sesame Street, you know, said, well, this is just kind of a reminder that we need to do a status check with each other a little bit more often. Elmo later posted, wow, Elmo was glad he asked. Elmo learned it is important to ask a friend how they are doing. Because like some people, one user wrote, somehow this actually legit makes me feel better. So you know, good job, Elmo. And good job, Pat, for trying not to do an Elmo impression at 6:12 in the morning. It just was not going
to
work.
On behalf of everyone, Pat, I just want to say thank you.
Yes, you're welcome, please. we talked about that yesterday. You know, this is kind of a mental health awareness week and month as well. And it's good that we check in with one another.
Yeah.
It's just that we're so used to. And again, I do think it's part sarcasm that if we turn to someone and say, well, how are you doing? You're going to get the, well, how do you think I'm doing? Or something like that.
I feel like I'm afraid. I'm sad I asked. I asked.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a good reminder. Check in with each other now and then. To unpack the news here on this Wednesday morning, a bit of a surprise out of something that otherwise was not a surprise on Capitol Hill yesterday. The thing that was not a surprise is that Republicans again showed that they are not able to govern with a very slim majority. They have no votes to lose. Let me remind you that Democrats had the exact same slim majority for the 2 years prior to this period, and they passed the bipartisan infrastructure law, the American Rescue Plan, the CHIPS and Science Act, and things like that. Republicans, meanwhile, have been saying for months they're going to impeach the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, and they failed yesterday. They failed by one vote. But that's because three or four Republicans voted no. And the surprise is that one of them was Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin, who when it was all said and done, he put out a lengthy statement. And it was a lot of, you know, mumbo jumbo about, oh, President Biden's open border policies and, you know, Democrats abused the impeachment process, you know, against Donald Trump, which if anybody abused the process, it was Republican senators who let Trump off. Anyway, the whole thing was just a word salad when what he meant to say was, I could be in a tough race. I got the free pass, you know, from the caucus because between, you know, Kristen Lyerly and two of our other guests who are going to join us tomorrow and a whole lot of other people in Northeast Wisconsin, I can feel people watching me like a hawk. So I'm going to go ahead and not go along with this ridiculous effort to impeach the Secretary of Homeland Security, which makes no sense, especially when you consider we are about to torpedo the thing that we asked for, which was a bipartisan bill to crack down on asylum seeking, undocumented immigration, and fentanyl coming across the border. And then there was more drama involved. Again, part of the reason it was a close vote is that one of the Democratic members was at a hospital in surgery, Congressman Al Green. So it was really rich when Georgia Looney Tune Marjorie Taylor Greene said afterwards that Democrats had planted, you know, a member to be away from the Capitol and then to bring him in at the last minute. No, you scheduled the vote, and Congressman Greene, in hospital garb, came directly from the hospital to cast the vote to prevent this circus from continuing of trying to impeach the Homeland Secretary. And then came a move, again, a Republican-inspired move, to have a standalone aid for Israel proposal out there. Because previously they said, well, we're not going to support aid to Israel unless it's tied to border security. Well, now they've shown their true colors. They don't actually want a border security bill. So now they tried to pass just a clean bill for aid to Israel, and it failed. It failed. They could not get that passed either. So on, you know, by every measure, the Republican House got nothing done yesterday except to again shine a spotlight on their inability to govern. And Greg, I know I said yesterday, I really got to keep that Chip Roy comment, you know, handy, where he said, how does he put it? We've got nothing to campaign on.
Give me something to go home and campaign on. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to find that thing. I'm just going to have it on permanent. I'm going to have a permanent sound effect.
Give me one thing that we can run on, and it's not there.
No.
The one thing that they passed yesterday was a resolution that said Donald Trump did not engage in insurrection on January 6th, 2021. It's the only thing they did that they accomplished yesterday was to try to protect Donald Trump, even as a court of appeals yesterday rejected his claims of absolute immunity from prosecution as an ex-president for things that he did while he was president. And we're going to get into more of that in just a bit. But again, it's just we'll keep the focus here on the House for not being able to do any of the things that are, again, important. And instead of, again, all the constant, carnival-like circus antics that go on, I would again point to the things that a Democratic-led Congress got done and say to the Republican side of the aisle, why don't you try that? Why don't you try doing things for American workers, for American families, for American small businesses? Why don't you stop with the games? Why don't we crack down, why don't we provide better border security, a better path to citizenship for immigration, and let's focus on the things that Americans really care about and not all these games. More coming up about that in just a couple of seconds, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Wednesday morning. When you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's been a hard
back now on Up North News Radio on this Wednesday morning. And we're going to talk about the Beatles in a half hour from now and this day in history, today's history lesson, and reacquaint you with an airport called Idlewild. That's what it used to be called out there in New York. But I want to come back to, and Greg, don't lose that clip yet. I'm going to have you play that opening chord again, because I always find it fascinating. And again, I don't know music. I've never studied music or music theory, but there's been so much written about that opening chord of A Hard Day's Night, that it's so unique. And I numerous articles have been written about it. And again, Greg, I don't know your music background, but I found this in Far Out magazine last night. Music theorist Walter Everett has poured countless hours into tackling this subject and seems to have cracked the full chord. Everett says the opening chord has an introductory dominant function thanks to McCartney playing the D on the bass. Harrison and George Martin play F, A, C, G over the bass D on 12-string guitar and piano, and that's what makes this sound. So, again, people, it's a great opening. I mean, you hear it right away. You're like, you're happy. All right, this is going to be a great little song. But I love anything that I know nothing about when I hear, like, about interstellar space, yeah, or other scientific things or the science of music. I'm always fascinated by people who study things that I will never know, and I appreciate what they're doing, but it really confuses me. It's like, well, it's just some strings on a guitar and a piano, right?
Well, it's an F chord. It's a very basic F chord, and then you add a ninth note to it. And the scale on the ninth note, you just get it. That ninth is what makes it so It makes a ping.
Yes. Yeah. It's the ping that does it. And, you know, again, we have to remember that in 1963, 64, I mean, music had not heard some of this type of chord progression, hadn't heard the screaming, the the woo. So it was just so different. Yeah. So anyway, it's what led to Beatlemania, and it's what we're going to be talking about in about a half hour here coming up in today's history lesson. Now, I mentioned before that former President Donald Trump was soundly rejected by a court of appeals yesterday as he continues to try to make the case that he is immune from prosecution. And I mean, he was arguing absolute immunity. You will recall his lawyer being asked by a judge, are you saying that Trump could order the assassination of political opponents in the U.S. and not be prosecuted? And his attorney said in so many words, yes, that's exactly what we're saying, that the only way he could be criminally prosecuted is if he were first to be impeached, tried, and convicted in Congress, and then a court could touch him, to which the three judges yesterday issued a 57-page opinion that said in so many words, are you kidding me? Get out of here. It systematically, the New York Times writes, weighed and forcefully rejected each of Trump's arguments for why the case against him should be dismissed for his efforts to try to overturn the results of an American election. Now, I'm glad that we got that out of the way. It took too long. It took this Court of Appeals a month to reject what should have been rejected out of hand. So let's remember what we're dealing with here. Yeah, there's the legal arguments, but what Trump does best, what he has always done best well before he became president, was to delay, 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 file every piece of paperwork possible to basically try to wear down, first off, the businesses and people that were suing him before he became president, and legal accountability once he became president. And so now this is apparently going to go back to Judge Chutkan, who could resume preparing for a trial that is no longer going to start in March now, probably in May. And we just continue to play into what Trump wants, and that is to be on trial during the conventions, during the fall campaign, and to make the case that, you know, they are persecuting me and prosecuting me because I'm the Republican frontrunner. The best part of this appeals court ruling yesterday was using a phrase that I've used for some time, and I'm glad to finally hear it used much more publicly. I don't want to hear that he's Republican candidate for President Trump. I don't want to hear that he's Republican frontrunner Trump. He is citizen Trump. There are privileges that go to being the sitting president of the United States, the commander in chief, the leader of a branch of government. But up until the moment you become president, and starting at 12:01, the day you are no longer president, you are, as the court put it, citizen Trump. And that's what he is right now. There is nothing special about Donald Trump in the eyes of the law. And this appeals court cemented that, saying that while you are a citizen, if you broke the law, you can be held accountable. Now, Trump is saying, well, now this just opens the door. You know, all future ex-presidents are going to be, you know, potentially prosecuted. Well, not if they don't commit crimes. There will still be, you know, burdens of proof that will lead to, you know, cases being laughably and easily dismissed. So if you're looking for an excuse to open up a Pandora's box, well, that was opened up a long time ago. That started with, you know, Newt Gingrich deciding to weaponize impeachment and, you know, the crimes that Donald Trump has committed. There could have been a successful impeachment of that had Republicans in the Senate 4 years ago decided to follow the rule of law. That's where your Pandora's box problem is. It's by this batch of Republicans that maybe should not be in office anymore to abuse the system the way they do. Greg, we've got the Super Bowl coming up, and two quick stories about that. First off, Kevin Harlan. I know I've talked about him. I kind of like him as a play-by-play guy. I did not realize that he has a daughter, Olivia Harlan Decker, who is a sideline reporter. And they will be the first father-daughter team to call the Super Bowl.
I just saw that this morning. I think that's fantastic. That's so cool.
Yeah. I knew that I had seen Olivia Decker before. I knew that she was married to former UW basketball star Sam Decker. I just never made the connection that her maiden name was Harlan and that she was the daughter of Kevin Harlan. So I thought that was that's great. So I think that's good fantastic. On them.
That's going to be so fun. That's going to be so much fun.
And the best part for me and Sherry is that we're gonna do some visiting this weekend, and so we're not gonna get home like maybe in time for kickoff. So we've got the DVR set already.
Yeah.
So we're gonna get the best version of the Super Bowl, which is on DVR, where we can skip through everything we don't want to see, just the good commercials, just the touchdown passes. It's gonna be great.
What I don't
and the other
go ahead. Sorry. I was gonna say what I don't like they do now is they start to release the commercials early. I'm like, no.
Yes.
Just Sunday. Just do it on Sunday.
Yeah. That's you want that mystery or whatever. It's like, well, why are you ruining your own bit of drama? Yeah. But anyway. So Mike Clemens is over there for Civic Media. He's in Las Vegas. I just heard him doing a sports update. I'd sent him a note a couple of days back saying, hey, I know you're in Las Vegas. They're on Pacific time. I'm sure you probably couldn't make an early morning radio show, but if by chance you're up really early. And he sends back something like, dude, I go to bed at 4 a.m., because he's covering all these late night sports. He's covering the Super Bowl. So I said, oh, well, great. Well, now, I thought, let's get you in the very end of the morning show, you know. But now it's like, well, if you're just going to bed, come on the early part of the show, right before you go to bed. So
let me tell you what I think about the Super Bowl, man.
We may or may not hear from Mike Clemens tomorrow or Friday as we get set for the Super Bowl. Our climate check with Melissa Baldoff and guest coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
It's electric.
We're back now on Up North News Radio and for this week's climate check with Melissa Baldoff. And again, what starts off as talking about the climate and perhaps the environment actually gets into the economy and gets into the jobs of the future. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning.
So let's jump right into it because of, the opportunities that are out there, not just for today, but for the future. Again, we mention it in this segment all the time that, one does not have to be a climate expert, that this is just as much about where are the jobs of the future going to be. It's just that you happen to get the best of both worlds when you keep the climate and the economy in mind. So what kinds of progress are we seeing in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing progress in Wisconsin. We are seeing progress when it comes to wind and solar, I think, especially seeing a lot of new jobs coming up as we're starting to see expansion. And these are jobs that are, really not in Madison and Milwaukee for the most part. These are jobs that are really benefiting our rural economies. They are jobs that pay well, that support a family, that have opportunity for a lot of growth. But I think that's why we have an expert on to talk about this today, though, because I could talk and give my opinion, but what we have today is a guest who is an expert when it comes to thinking about how the clean economy is going to benefit our workers and our communities and how we can really have a just transition that ensures good paying jobs for the folks who are doing this work and that everyone's going to benefit from the economy. So I'm really excited that we've got Andrew Dish to join us today and talk a little bit about a recent event that he participated in. There was a climate jobs summit recently in New York that brought together leaders from government, from the business community, from unions, folks all over, all across the spectrum to talk about, what's going on, why this is important and how we can ensure that we are transitioning to, this clean economy workforce in the best possible way. So really excited to have Andrew join us and tell us a little bit about what he's been working on and the summit and how, most importantly, how this is going to benefit Wisconsin.
Yeah, Andrew, good morning. Give us a little bit of your backstory and we'll get into the events.
Yeah, great. Thanks, guys. My name is Andrew Dish. I work for the Carpenters Union here in Wisconsin. I live in Madison. I handle their legislative and political affairs program. And of course, part of that is energy policy, which is increasingly a bigger and bigger deal for union workers and carpenters across the state. So in that role, I had the opportunity last week to be part of a group of other labor leaders from Wisconsin to join the Climate Jobs National Resource Center at their summit in New York City. The mission of Climate Jobs is to promote the policies that build a green economy while also building and promoting good paying union jobs. To achieve that, they promote policies both at the federal level. I think the Inflation Reduction Act, specifically the renewable tax credits within the Inflation Reduction Act is carrying that mission at the federal level and also at the state level too, to learn from other, as Melissa said, labor leaders, academics, business communities, utilities even, to see what those policies look like throughout the nation right now.
Well, especially when you consider that, I mean, we are talking, you know, billions of dollars in opportunities that are out there that are going to be invested in the new economy. And so, I mean, decision makers at all levels need to know more about this. The New York gathering apparently, you know, had everything from labor leaders, climate experts, but also philanthropists and policymakers. And so, I mean, How is your view of it in terms of whether people have a grasp on the potential that is out there for a new generation of jobs?
Yeah, there's a ton of potential, Pat. And I think that really is the crossroads that we're at, to make sure that these new technologies, this new way of green energy production is also supporting middle class and creating pathways, mainly through apprenticeship, into good paying middle class union jobs. As you said from the jump, those things can totally coexist, and there's policies happening right now to ensure that they coexist. I would say the number one policy driving that right now, again, getting back to the renewable tax credits contained within the IRA, there's two benchmarks that utilities or solar wind developers need to achieve to maximize and capture the maximum amount of tax credits, and that is apprenticeship standards and prevailing wages. And what we're seeing is that the non-union market share, which was pervasive in the renewable industry, has really disappeared, and those are starting to become good-paying middle-class union jobs because of this federal policy and the tax credits that we're seeing, like the market driving that work towards union workers, especially union workers in Wisconsin, because in order, again, to capture those tax credits, they need to pay prevailing wages and they need to hit apprenticeship ratios. Apprenticeship, obviously, Wisconsin's been a leader in that for a long time, is the way to get applicants or people looking for work, looking for that middle class way of life, the opportunity into a union job through registered apprenticeship.
I almost feel a sense of urgency from what you're telling me, because for this next generation of jobs to grow in clean energy sectors, it can go one of two ways. And if there is a lot of organized labor input from the beginning in key areas, then you're going to have those prevailing wages. You're going to have those apprenticeships. You're going to have those things where, you know, a rising tide is going to lift all boats. Whereas if organized labor were to essentially, you know, be complacent about this, you'd face a generation of jobs in renewable industries with wages and rules not nearly as healthy for American workers as they could be.
Yeah, you're spot on. I do feel kind of like we're at that tipping point right now where there is a level of urgency. And I think that's why there's groups like Climate Jobs right now on the forefront of these issues, to make sure that the jobs of the future, if labor doesn't engage and get in front of these now that we would be missing out on decades and generations, just because we know that the way that we produce energy is changing, and we need to be part of that change and embrace that change instead of resisting. I can tell you, you know, as an example, our apprenticeship programs are top notch at our training centers in Wisconsin for the Carpenters Union. We have 5 training centers that serve our apprentices throughout the state. You know, we are being nimble to change, and adjust our programming and our curriculum inside our training centers to adapt to this changing, you know, energy industry. For example, you can go to our training center in Milwaukee right now, and there's solar panels. So we're adapting to the market.
That's great. And, you know, one of the things I've heard you say a little bit here is, you know, talking about, you know, these are good jobs, and these are going to help folks, you know, get into and stay in the middle class. But, you know, like what specifically are we talking about for a good job here? Like, what kind of pay and benefits would a carpenter working on one of these projects receive?
The pay and the benefits are second to none, Melissa. So our apprentices on day one, we have 10,000 members statewide, journey person, apprentices, and retirees. So let's start with apprentices. On day one, apprentice in our union makes $25 on the check. In addition to that $25 on the check, they have full family health insurance plus a pension. And those are not payroll deductions. That's on top of the check. As they progress through the apprenticeship program, our program is 4 years. They earn while they learn. There's absolutely no tuition on their end. They get raises throughout the four-year progression through their apprenticeship, so that at the end of the 4 years, when they complete their apprenticeship, they start at 25. They get raises along the way. We call it journey out. When they reach journey person status, they're at $41 on the check today, plus, again, the pension and family health insurance on top of that hourly wage.
Yeah. So, you know, so these are good paying jobs. These are jobs that support a family. And I have to imagine, you know, we're seeing, I would hope that we're seeing young people who are interested. I think, you know, one of the, you know, nice changes in recent years, and this has been a conversation in my, you know, daily life, having a recent high school graduate and hearing her and her friends and, you know, some friends who have kids the same age talk about what their future looks like. Not everyone is talking about a 4-year college degree anymore. And, you know, for some people, that's the right path. And for a lot of people, it's not. So I'm glad that there's more conversation about these good jobs that don't require a 4-year degree. Is there a lot of enthusiasm that you're seeing from young people who want to get into this line of work?
Yeah, great question. So the answer is yes. So right now, our statewide number of apprentices is hovering around 1,200. That is an all-time high. So we are seeing that high demand for these jobs. And I think you're right. I think that the paradigm is shifting, whereas in the past, jobs in the trades may have been looked at as a fallback option. But in reality, they're an equal option. They're just a different option. And I can tell you, you can come to our training centers, visit with our apprentices. I can tell you that they're just as capable, just as driven, just as intelligent as their peers pursuing, you know, traditional degrees at four-year institutions. Also, I think the fact that these are tuition-free programs without any student loan debt is also driving demand, as, you know, student loan debt becomes a heavier burden on people today. I think the fact that you're paid while you're at work, you're paid while you're in a classroom, there's absolutely no tuition, also makes a job in the trades, you know, really attractive to folks today in our state.
And by the way, you know, beyond Wisconsin, I mean, this is a national level issue. If you were to look at the website for the Climate Jobs National Resource Center, you'll see everything from, you know, offshore wind energy, you know, off the coast of Maine. You'll see, you know, hydrogen hubs that they're talking about in the Houston area, solar on public buildings in New York City. So, I mean, Andrew, in terms of, you know, what is Wisconsin specific, again, is there any one of these things that is going to have the lion's share of future employment, or is it really kind of an all hands on deck, anything is possible for the green spectrum of jobs?
Yeah, good question. What we're seeing most is solar in Wisconsin. We're seeing a little more wind come online, and I think we will see more. But right now we're seeing a lot of solar. Specifically, we're seeing utility scale solar. Utility scale solar, I think, is roughly defined as solar fields that are 100 megawatts and above. And they're really coming online largely rural, in largely rural areas of the state. And it kind of leads into another benefit, and that is the rural economy. The fact that, you know, these good paying union jobs are occurring, you know, outside Madison, outside Milwaukee, in rural Wisconsin. I can tell you, as an example, there was a large solar farm in Richland County that our members worked on. It was recently completed. And to recruit and to staff up the number of skilled workers needed to complete that project in Richland County, we had recruiters at the Richland County Fair in a booth, recruiting, you know, local folks for these good paying jobs, folks that, you know, may have had in the past had to travel elsewhere for a job that pays the scale of as a union carpenter is. So there really is a story here about green jobs, good paying union green jobs, union jobs, and revitalizing the rural economy.
Just so much, and we've barely scratched the surface, but it's been a lot to learn and very exciting. Andrew Dish from the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Yeah, Melissa, thank you too. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. Again, it's just so much to learn about the jobs that are going to be created. A lot of them can be, you know, union-led jobs. And then in our next hour, we're going to be talking about the history of labor unions in America, and not just looking at the dusty old past, but the relevance to today and what it means for job security, you know, respect on the job, pay, benefits, safety concerns, you name it. That's all just ahead. Coming up, though, in just a moment, today's history lesson and some musical memories, and we will be joined by Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio in Wisconsin Rapids next, live from Lake Wissota. You're up north. On this day in 1970, the number one hit, Venus, was by Shocking Blue. I have to say, a bit more contemporary version would be the Bananarama version, but this would be the original. Melissa Kay is here from Locally Grown Radio in Wisconsin Rapids. Melissa, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning. You know, your listeners have to join just to see Greg dance.
I was going to say, you're here just for the interpretive dance.
I am. Mm-hmm. I come just for Greg. Although you're lovely too, Pat.
I can't even hold a candle to the loveliness that is dancing Greg. What's new in Rapids?
You know, we are gearing up for an exciting mayoral race in Wisconsin Rapids. So this week on WFHR, we have asked the candidates that are running to come on to Midday Magazine, which is our local programming from 3 to 4 in the afternoon. And they are talking with James about why they're running.
Very nice. Okay. Yeah. So folks can listen there. And of course, also through the Civic Media app, or head over to civicmedia.us to look up the show. And
that's correct.
Catch some back issues there as well. Good to know. So I mentioned, in terms of, you know, Beatlemania, I'd mentioned earlier that thousands of screaming fans greeted the Beatles when their plane landed at Idlewild, now JFK in New York. The first time the Beatles were here, and, you know, people went wild. They'd show up on the Ed Sullivan Show a couple of days later. I can't imagine. No, sorry, I just caught myself. I was going to say, I can't imagine anything like that. And then I just remembered all the boy bands. What's the big one now? Is it BTK or something like that?
That's a serial killer. BTS.
Okay, yeah. You know, one of those things. A BLT. That was it. I'm sorry.
The McLean Burger.
That's the McDLT. Come on, Greg. Get your boy bands and burgers straight. So that was the
BTS.
BTS, of course. That's Bachman Turner Overdrive. That's what I meant. Bachman Turner Overdrive. They were a boy band once upon a time. Oh,
no, let's the South Korean boy band.
Yeah. South Korean boy band. Thank you. Let's get back to the birthdays now, shall we? Garth Brooks is 62.
Little known fact.
Yes.
I worship Garth Brooks.
You know, and now you get Melissa Kay's interpretive dance of Garth Brooks calling Baton Rouge.
Dance, Melissa!
I did not know that you were a big old fan of Garth Brooks.
I'll tell you a really quick story. Back in the 90s, I tried to get tickets to go see it back in the days before online buying. This was the early 90s. You had to go to like your favorite music store to buy tickets because they had a Ticketron outlet. And
oh, yeah. Ticketron.
Me and four other guys went to the wrong place, and it was at a Best Buy where they're doing a lottery. And they're like, you want to come with us? And I got into a car as a 12-year-old with strangers.
Ooh. Oh, my.
And when we got back to the place where I originally went, my mom was sitting there crying. I'm like, what happened? She's like, I thought you were kidnapped. I'm like, I was just getting Garth Brooks tickets. I didn't get any, but I'm alive.
Oh, gosh. Oh. And that was the end of Greg at that point.
Yep.
But no, I'm glad you lived.
Up.
Yeah, that's right. Laurel Ingalls Wilder was born this day in 1867. John Deere of the tractors and the song John Deere Green, born this day in 1804. Actor James Spader is 64 today.
Wow.
And comedian Chris Rock is 59. Mm-hmm. It was, and Herb Kohl was born this day in 1935. Rest in peace, the former businessman and Wisconsin senator. Now, here's a great little bit of musical trivia. I have heard Neil Young's Heart of Gold many, many times. Melissa, I'm sure you have too.
Oh, probably.
And so here's the snippet that Greg is going to play because it was recorded in the studio this day in 1971. Listen to the backup singers. It was recorded this day, 1971, with backup singers Linda Ronstadt and James Taylor.
Who are those young upstarts?
Yeah, well, they were at the time, right?
I love this song.
I've always liked the background anyway, and they're like, of course it's Linda Ronstadt. That makes perfect sense.
That pedal steel guitar.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Outstanding all the way around. On this day in 1976, the number one song was by Paul Simon.
Problem is all inside your head, she said to me. The answer is easy if you take it like.
Now, folks who are familiar with the song recall that the thing there, they get to the chorus, you know, slip out the back jack, make a new plan, stand, and so many other people thought they were cute and tried to make up, you know, other verses. It's when you realize you really should leave songwriting to the songwriters, you know.
Get divorced, Morris.
Yes. I mean, you got Hop on the Bus, Gus. How are you going to top that, right?
I think I just nailed it. Get divorced, Morris. I mean, whatever.
That was pretty darn good.
Thank you.
Pinocchio premiered on this day in 1940. It was the second ever full-length animated film, and we'll hear Jiminy Cricket later from that movie. The Soviet Union dissolved on this day in 1990 when the Central Committee of the Soviet Communist Party agreed to give up its monopoly on power, though one Mr. Putin is slowly cobbling it back together. A lot of things on the national calendar today, so stop me at any point if you want to expound on National Ballet Day, National Fettuccine Alfredo Day, Periodic Table of the Elements Day. No. Girls and Women in Sports Day. This is World Read Aloud Day. Black HIV AIDS Awareness Day, African Heritage and Health Week, International Week of Black Women in the Arts, and National Apprenticeship Week. And we had talked about the value of apprenticeships just a bit ago with the next generation of jobs there. Mm-hmm. All right, Melissa, what are you doing for the Super Bowl? Big party? Do you watch the commercials? Do you tune
What's
it all out?
What's the Super Bowl?
There we go. Oh. Okay, Melissa, right on cue, going back to her Luddite roots there.
I'll be reading a book.
Probably studying my script.
Oh, that's right. You still have your play that you're working on.
Mm-hmm. It's coming together.
Okay.
We filmed all our elements just this week, so it's going to be filmed elements and live elements, and it's going to be really cool.
Where is this in your extensive theater career? Is this like one of your bigger, meatier roles? Or do you have to memorize more here than anything else? Or?
Well, the last show I was in was a one-woman show. So that was one solid hour of me talking. So as far as meat goes and line count, if you do that, no. But it's a fun character because she's very dynamic. I get to like scream at somebody on stage, which is so fun.
Oh, I like that. I mean, because in terms of, one-man show, this one guy here is yodeling for 2 hours every day. So I do have that going for me. Thank you, Melissa. Nice. Have a wonderful rest of your week.
You too, guys. Thank you.
All right. Much more coming up after news, including teaching the labor movement in